If I look at the business organization of the future, and we think of the level of disruption that is happening, it requires a different set of skills. It requires an ability to actually make sense of the world and to be able to bring your people on a journey with you, because you can't mandate disruption. You can't turn around and say, look, we're doing digital transformation and expect it to happen. People either want to be on the journey with you or they don't. But if you want to bring people on the journey with them, you need to create that environment where people can feel comfortable about the future. They understand what the future is about. They understand what it means for their customers, their stakeholders, but most importantly, what it means for them. Because what I find is organizations tend to maybe have the town hall meeting where they talk about the grand plan. But as soon as people leave that meeting, the first thing that goes through their mind is, well, what does this mean for me and my team and my department? And if they can't see or understand what that means, now you have a real problem. And look, to my mind, when I look at digital disruption and I look at digital transformation in particular, the majority of them fail. And it's not because of technology. I think, in fact, we would be better off if we dropped the word digital and just focused on transformation.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Ed's Talk with me, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter, the podcast where we talk to C-level executives, leaders of institutions, and heads of multinationals. What are the current topics? They talk, we listen.
Can you imagine getting into a business or a market where you actually spend $100 billion plus on a piece of paper?
Are you kidding me?
It was like a frying pan to the head.
I got nothing against CFOs.
It was not just the job of a lifetime, it was the job of 1,000 lifetimes.
My guest today is an internationally recognized advisor in strategy, digital transformation, and financial services. With a global footprint, he has collaborated with clients spanning Europe, the Middle East, the US, Latin America, and the Caribbean. Furthermore, he serves as a senator representing Ireland at the World Business Angels Investment Forum, affiliated with the G20 Global Partnership for Financial Inclusion. A prolific content sharer on social media, this indeed will be an insightful conversation. But before we get into that, here's a brief message. This episode is sponsored by Axia. Axia is the leading private cloud platform in the Alessian and Mattermost ecosystem, combining intelligent solutions with security and control. Axia's clients profit from digitalization and automation of critical business processes in a cloud and hybrid architecture. 150 staff provide migration, engineering, and support services to over 200 leading organizations in 32 countries.
Ed's Talk podcast with your host, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.
Tony Moroni, the principal at the Digital Explorer, a business consultancy service organization, also serves as the co-founder of the Digital Transformation Lab, a think tank based at Cork University Business School. Additionally, he holds the role of program director for digital leadership at the Irish Management Institute. A sought-after contributor to the speaking circuit, Tony is well regarded for his extensive knowledge in digital transformation and financial services. Beyond this, he is actively involved in various committees and holds a position of director at the World Smart Cities Economic Development Commission. Adding to his impressive list of accomplishments, Tony has been acknowledged as a top 10 thought leader for digital disruption and a top 25 for digital transformation, generative AI and fintech by the Thinkers 360 Marketplace Agency. Let's now have a conversation. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Tony to Ed's Talk. Many thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you, Elaine. Great to be here.
Excellent. Okay. In addition with my introduction to you, I'd like you to elaborate on the organizations that you currently run, work within, and align to, so that we get a feel of the workload at the moment.
Well, I was very impressed with the introduction you gave me, so thank you so much for that. I suppose my role is kind of interesting in that I work in the business side, I work in advisory, I work in education, and I also work in thought leadership. In terms of advisory, it tends to be in the world of strategy, transformation, and actually helping executives and board directors make sense of digital disruption. Because as you well know, the future, we can't rely on the past to determine what we're going to do in the future, because there's just so much change happening in society and with technology itself. On the education side, You know, I do work with a number of universities, but I work with the Irish Management Institute, where I run their digital leadership program, their cyber leadership program, their generative AI program for senior leaders, mm-hmm. and their future financial services. And that's great in that the type of people that I have in those programs are people like us. You know, they're in business, they're dealing with real world problems. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic to, you know, to work in an environment where you're actually helping people make sense of this together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I do a lot of it on the thought leadership side, and, you know, with the Digital Transformation Lab in particular, we interview really interesting people from all over the world about books they've written or about particular mm-hmm. areas of disruption that they're focused on. So it's eclectic, but as I say, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
So would you say you've got your fingers in a lot of pies, or are you spreading yourself thinly?
I'd say they're all interrelated, funny enough, because everything, you know, be it advisory, education or thought leadership, it's all around disruption and financial services. And there's a huge overlap between both. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's looking at it through many lenses, which I think is really important, because, you know, it's very easy to get caught on the tram tracks in looking at problems in a particular way. Mm-hmm. But when you're forced out of your comfort zone and you need to think about it from different perspectives, it gives you a much broader understanding of the issues and the complexities that we're dealing with.
All right, that's good. And so what are your current priorities? And, you know, based on what you said, you've got a fingers in a lot of pies and they're all interrelated. But what is your current priority, or maybe a project you particularly want to share with my listeners?
Well, actually, you know, I'm doing a lot on the education front at the moment, and we're trying to, you know, we're doing a lot around generative AI and what it means for future leadership, and mm-hmm. you know, particularly focused on, you know, if I look at the business organization of the future, and we think of the, you know, level of disruption that is happening, it requires a different set of skills. It requires an ability to actually make sense of the world, and yeah. to be able to, you know, bring your people on a journey with you, because you can't mandate disruption. You can't turn around and say, look, we're doing digital transformation and expect it to happen. You know, people either want to be on the journey with you or they don't. But if you want to bring people on the journey with them, you need to create that environment where people can feel comfortable about the future. They understand what the future is about. They understand what it means for their customers, their stakeholders, but most importantly, what it means for them. Because what I find is, organizations tend to maybe have the town hall meeting where they talk about the grand plan. Mm-hmm. But as soon as people leave that meeting, the first thing that goes through their mind is, well, what does this mean for me and my team and my department? And if they can't see or understand what that means, now you have a real problem. And look, to my mind, when I look at digital disruption, and I look at digital transformation in particular, you know, the majority of them fail. And it's not because of technology. I think, you know, in fact, we would be better off if we dropped the word digital and just focused on transformation, because mm-hmm. transformation is all about people. And I think that gets lost.
Mm. Yeah. And I suppose it's not just what it means to them, but for them to understand the benefit it is to them.
Absolutely. Exactly. I mean, I should be able to turn around and say, here's what digital transformation means in our organization. Here's what it means for me personally. Here are the skills that I'm going to develop over the next mm-hmm. 2, 3, mm-hmm. 5 years. And understand, you know, that actually I will have a role to play in this if I so choose. Now, if I decide I want to leave, that's a different matter. But I still get new skills. But I should be able to answer those questions in terms of what does it look like and what does it mean for me and how will I benefit as well as, you know, my customers and my stakeholders. And I think, look, what's lost is when we think about disruption, you know, the role of the organization is to figure out how to be competitive and relevant in the future. And it's the same for our people. They need to be, their skills need to be relevant. Their skills need to be competitive into the future as well. Mm-hmm. So we need to, you know, join up all the dots so people can look at, you know, the world of disruption, not be fazed by it, but understand actually this is a continuous process. And if we can grapple with it and make sense of it on an ongoing basis, actually we will all be far better off.
So a lot of what you do is literally you're removing fear and you're imparting knowledge. That's basically what
absolutely. Yes. Yeah, and I think look, the problem, look, I can go into a board or an executive team or actually a classroom full of executives, ask a simple question using a tool like Mentimeter or whatever. What do you mean by digital transformation? And if there's 10 people on the board, I might get 35 answers. Yes. So immediately you have the insight on the problem, because we claim to be doing things like digital transformation, but yet we haven't defined it. So how does that work? So, you know, if we haven't defined it, you can imagine what happens when it goes down to the next level and the next level and the next level. Now you end up with 400 definitions of what it means to digitally transform. Yeah. And the organization gets totally confused and actually starts to become cynical because they say, well, here we go again. And here's the latest coming from the head office or whatever. And there's no commitment to it.
Mm-hmm. We should have a tag name for you. We should call you Digital Whisperer or something. That'd be
excellent. Well, a Digital Explorer.
You enter meetings. This is a Digital Whisperer. But as you say, yes.
There's so much going on here. And I think the one thing we're absolutely certain about, Elaine, is that, you know, it's not going to stop changing. And there's going to be more and more disruptive technologies and more and more disruptive forces, period. Yeah. And, you know, the organization of the past, which, you know, worked in a steady environment and competed with people in its industry, well, that's no longer the world we're in. There is no, you know, industry per se, because your competition can come from anywhere. And you need to be ready for it.
Yeah. Aren't you sort of taken aback by the speed of everything? And it's not stopping.
No, it's not stopping. In fact, it's accelerating. And I think really what's really interesting for me is, it's as these technologies evolve and start coming together, and then suddenly you get a confluence of technologies coming together, and suddenly the world is totally different. And it's a bit like you know, it's happening by stealth, and for a lot of organizations, they're not even quite sure what's happening, and their focus tends to be very much on what they are doing as opposed to making sense of the external world and starting to ask questions. What does this mean for our business? Yes. Yes. And if we don't respond to this, will we be here in the future? Or if we want to be here and we want to be relevant and competitive, how is it that we need to change? And I think there's the nugget of it is, we need to focus on how to transform as opposed to what to do, because I think there's plenty of what's, and organizations are busy, you know, doing what's. So they're doing lots of digital initiatives, but they actually haven't taken the time to figure out how to transform.
But it's such a hard time for businesses to take, like never before, because I'm sort of putting myself in their shoes and thinking, is this a fad? Will this be around next year? Do I need to bother with this? Do I need to move with the time? And if I move with it and it sort of disappears, then how much time and money I've wasted in this space? You know, all these kind of questions which are going around their heads. And I assume they're looking to organizations like you to help them sift through all of this.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the metaverse is a classic example. So, you know, last year was all metaverse. This year it's all generative AI. You know, next year it'll probably be quantum computing or something. Yes. Yes. But, you know, the metaverse hasn't gone away. We mightn't call it the metaverse, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, experiential, you know, experiential sort of engagements with our customers and all those type of things. So the essence of it is still there. I think what organizations need to do is to, you know, maybe park the technology for a minute and sort of say, well, look, if we think about our customers and what they expect of us today, tomorrow, and into the future, and recognizing that our customers are and employees of the future, they're all digital natives. So, like, they're not, you know, technology is not alien to them. Mm-hmm. So their expectations are going to be quite different. And what we need to start to figure out is, okay, well, what does that say in terms of how we need to transform? Now, I think one of the big things that we should be doing here, Lane, is we should be tapping into our young digital native employees. And we should be asking them the questions about, well, how do you think we're doing? Or how would you do things differently? Because I'm sure they're joining our organizations and they're sort of saying to themselves, well, this is kind of quaint, but it's nowhere near what I meant to do on Xbox. So I think we should be tapping into them.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, and I think every organization should have reverse mentoring, because if you think of the average age of the board or the average age of the executive, well, you know, pretty sure they were born pre the internet and pre the smartphone. And really what we need to do is, you know, give them insights in terms of there is a different way to think about business, but also for our high potential, you know, young graduates, give them the understanding of the business and the risks in the business and the different type of things that need to be considered. And I think that's a win-win, because it's non-threatening. The executives or board directors are actually learning about, you know, the world through a totally different lens. Mm-hmm. And the young people are also starting to learn about the business in a way that helps them, you know, really add value into the future.
Oh, that's a great point, Tony. Thanks for that. I want you to share some thoughts on the recent Capgemini World Cloud Report, Financial Services 2023, Cloud in Financial Services. Firstly, thank you for sharing this report on your LinkedIn page. I think I will put a link in your episode notes so that listeners can click on it straight away while listening to this. But please just provide my listeners with an overview of the report and just your thoughts on it.
Well, I think cloud is one of those things that, financial services has been struggling with for a long time. And I think when you think about financial services, it very much is a command and control environment because it's highly regulated and, innovation tends to be very sort of, guarded. It's not rushed in any shape or form. Cloud, though, is starting to be recognized as a key growth catalyst. So if we want to change and, back to this point about being competitive and relevant in the future, banks always talk about their legacy system. I would argue maybe actually it's legacy culture. But if we take the legacy system for the moment and sort of say, well, can we get there from here? And in a lot of cases, the answer is probably not. We need to start thinking differently in terms of how can we enable innovation and how can we actually speed up innovation in our organization? And cloud offers that opportunity because, it starts to become something that's, it's not about, CapEx. So you're not making big investment decisions. You're actually, you're now basically hiring, capacity, and it becomes an operational issue thing. But it also enables you to focus on, well, what are the component parts of the business that we need to plug together? How do we drive customer service? How do we actually start to get real data and insights? Because, banks talk about being customer centric, but there's huge gaps in their data. Absolutely. And, to me, data is a mindset issue. It's a cultural issue, right? If you're not in the business of using data to make decisions to, run your organization, having, CRM systems and this, that, and the other is not going to change a lot. It's just going to give you some insights that you may or may not act on. So I think, cloud gives us an opportunity to sort of say, well, actually, there's a lot of data and, using cloud providers, we actually can start to understand the data a lot more and start to drive the type of, decisions that we need to make sure that are going to give our customers the experience that they expect in an agile way, but also in a fast way. Because, we can't, with the world we're in now, and particularly, you got fintechs who, have only one goal in life, how to disrupt banks. But I say that kind of flippantly, but really, what does a fintech do? It sort of says, what happens today? And what's not great about that experience? And how could we do it better? Now, so their starting point is, creating a customer experience or some novelty in terms of how it's delivered. That takes, and it's not to say banks can't do that, of course they can, but it takes them a long time to respond
Yes.
because, they have systems that, aren't necessarily geared up for the type of change they want or don't give them the type of insights they need. And I think, there's going to be a growing, push towards moving towards the cloud where you actually can be much faster in market. You can innovate quicker. You can give your customers what they need quicker, but you can also get the insights on what your customers are doing.
I think it was a great point you made. I think you stated that financial services tend to adopt a lift and shift approach to cloud. The report itself, I sort of browsed through, it sort of outlines that the journey is not about moving to the cloud, rather it's more about cloud-enabled business growth. So how do you, Tony, especially with your financial advisory service capacity and have that head on, go about changing the mindset of financial service institutions to see the benefits of the latter as opposed to the former?
So my starting point is, we never start with the technology. We always start with what is it we're actually trying to do in the business? And then we look at how do we need to change the organization or the business model to get there? And in addressing that question, you now start to bump into things like, well, actually, maybe the cloud could help us there, or maybe something else could help us there. But we're starting from the perspective of what are we actually trying to solve? And I think the problem that a lot of organizations have is that they catch on to whatever is in the Harvard Business Review or whatever is being talked about in the marketplace or whatever. And they're kind of, we need one of those. But well, why do we need one of those? Right? It comes back to What are we actually trying to do in the business, and how do we get there? And if we can answer those two questions, you know, solutions like cloud and other things start to become self-evident in terms of what role they play. But it's not about the cloud, because the cloud, just like any other technology, is just an enabler. I mean, yeah, you can get the cloud and just sit there and it'll do absolutely nothing. Right? So it's, what are you trying to enable in the business? Is it that you're trying to, be faster to market? Yeah. Is it that you're trying to have better insights? Is it that you're trying to shift from a legacy sort of system to something that's more dynamic? Yeah. So, but why are you trying to do that? And that comes back to, what are we trying to solve, right? Yes. What is the problem we're dealing with, or what is the opportunity that we're struggling with?
It's really that old quote from Steve Jobs. It never goes old. It's, what exactly do I need to do for my customers? And how does technology allow me to do that? It's always and it will continue to be that, I suppose. Okay, and still with the report, people are talking about accelerating sustainable financial service, cloud growth operations. But, you know, Tony, you're a straight talking man. What exactly does this mean for the business and for the customers?
Look, I think for the business, it's all about being relevant. Because if you can't respond to changes in the market and you deliver the products and services that your customer needs, well, you know, your customers won't be your customers for too long. It's all about relativity. So we can talk about, you know, how digitally mature we are as an organization, and we may be making progress, but on a relative basis, if we're losing ground to, you know, other, you know, incumbents or new players, well, that's a real problem, because it's only a matter of time where, you know, either we become so irrelevant that we don't matter, or actually that our business model changes. We're actually, well, what are we? Are we some sort of utility in the background? So I think the real challenge for the business is, how does this help us to be relevant and competitive into the future? And being relevant and competitive, maybe actually we need to be faster to respond to market changes, to customer changes, to customer demands, to anticipating customer needs. Because, like, if we think about, you go to Amazon or Netflix or, you know, any of these type of companies, they know who you are. They know what you've been doing. They know what you like. They can actually anticipate what you're going to do next, or what you might want to do next. So, you know, banking is a million miles away from that. Banking is still, to my mind, driven by two things. And the P&L supports this. It's driven by products and channels. So if you look at any bank presentation, they'll tell you how many products they've sold, and they'll tell you what channels they're using. They really talk about this from a customer-centric perspective, sort of says, well, let me talk about the insights that we have on our customers and what this means in terms of how we have changed. I am aware of one bank, and they changed from cross-selling to cross-buying in an attempt to sort of change the culture. But, you know, banks don't think that way. They think about, how many products have we sold through what channels? And I think that there's a real issue there in terms of, if you want to be customer-centric and you really want to understand, you know, what your customers are going to want to do into the future, well, your model needs to support that.
Okay, let's look at AI's impact on financial services. The question is, where do we start? Where the hell do we start? Okay, let's start with this. If you could provide my listeners with case studies demonstrating the strategic application of generative AI in the financial services sector. You know, it would be great if these studies highlight instances where the absence of generative AI would have rendered the operation or task either impossible or at the very least arduous to accomplish.
Yeah, okay. So what I'd like to do first, Elaine, is maybe put AI in context and sort of say that, look, you know, banks have been using artificial intelligence for a long time, but a bit like everything to do with technology, banks tend to, in the first instance, look at technology either from a cost or a risk and compliance perspective.
It was more predictive, wasn't it?
Yeah. But when we start to look at, you know, how artificial intelligence has evolved over the last 12 months, and bear in mind, you know, ChatGPT was only a year old last month. But when we start to think about that, there's a couple of things going on. The first thing is that the interface between humans and technology has changed. And, you know, that's very significant in terms of where we go to in the future, because to my mind, the programming language of the future will be the spoken language, right? So if you think about it today, you can go to any of these tools and you can, you know, write in what you're thinking and it'll produce text, images, whatever you like. Mm-hmm. Right? The other thing that has done, it has created a generative engine. So we can put in, you know, whatever ideas, thoughts, facts, whatever, mm-hmm. and it will generate new outcomes for us. You know, so new to the world, things that we haven't seen before. So I think the crux of the matter comes down to this. You're going to have artificial intelligence, which is going to do the normal, you know, risk management, cost reduction, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's going to become a hygiene factor. Right? Because if you don't do it, you're going to be uncompetitive.
Yeah.
Right? And when I look at banks, a lot of what they're doing, even today with generative AI, is in that space. It's the routine, you know, it'll take out costs, it'll make compliance better, it'll do whatnot. I think the real issue is going to be, who's going to be able to take generative AI and create new value for customers and new ways of doing things for customers and new experiences for customers? And we're not seeing a whole lot of that at the moment. Mm-hmm. We are starting to see some, you know, potential, you know, green shoots of things that might happen. So, you know, Bloomberg obviously is made a huge investment in terms of how it's going to, you know, with, you know, absolute billions upon billions of data points mm-hmm. from you know, financial markets and from, you know, the World Wide Web. It's going to, you know, create financial advice, you know, or insights that customers can have. Mm-hmm. JP Morgan are trying to do stuff where, you know, they can use these generative tools to act as a sort of, you know, I suppose, a financial investment advisor. Morgan Stanley are trying to do something similar. You know, Bank of America are trying to do things where they're using, you know, their AI-driven virtual assistant, mm-hmm. you know, to help customers with tasks and to navigate, you know, banking and sort out things that are important to them. You know, Royal Bank of Canada, they're trying to use predictive analytics, you know, mm-hmm. to look at, you know, how they can help the client, you know, figure out what they need to do. But I still struggle to see. And I think, you know, part of this comes back to, part of it is culture. Part of it is we have to recognize that banking is a heavily regulated sector. And when we look at AI, you know, one of the things that quite amazes me is when I talk to organizations and I talk to executive classrooms and whatnot, and I ask a simple question like, you know, well, how many of you have policies in place for generative AI, right? You know, there's not too many hands going up, right?
Do you really ask questions like that next bit?
Yeah, now, when we think about it, though, like, you know, as things stand, right, you know, anyone with internet access can access these tools.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's part of the reason why it's been so successful, right? So if there's 5 billion internet users, right, and there's, you know, just as many mobile smartphones, whatever, right? Every single person has access to these tools. And whether employers know it or not, you know, their employees are using these tools. Mm. And, you know, some interesting stats came out there a few days ago showing, you know, where people were using these tools without their employer's knowledge or actually against their employer's wishes.
I've seen that as well.
Right? So I think, you know, the thing that banks need to get clarity around is they need to understand the regulation. And the regulation is still moving. And look, there's different perspectives between Europe and the UK and the US and China and whatnot. So, you know, AI regulation is yet to sort of land somewhere, right?
Okay.
I think there's huge issues around ethics and responsible use of AI, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you're going to do something here, and bear in mind, right, the big issue for me is, it's not like having an employee in a branch that does something that impacts, you know, 30 customers, right? You do something using these tools, either explicitly or, you know, without even knowing, right? You suddenly might find you have impacted millions or all of your customers, right? And now you've got conduct risk issues at scale. So I can understand, you know, why banks will be cautious in terms of trying to find out what are the best use cases. But I do think that the banks that can figure out how to use generative AI to create, you know, products and services that are timely and seamless and highly relevant and personalized to customers are going to be the winners. And I think, you know, I'm pretty certain that there's a lot of fintechs and, you know, challenger banks and neobanks all thinking that way. Mm-hmm. If you're an incumbent bank, though, it's hard to do that because, you know, well, where do you start? And how do you make it happen? And how do you make sure that, you know, you're being responsible, that you're being ethical, that the outcomes are the right outcomes from a customer's perspective? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no point in trying to turn around later and sort of saying, well, we didn't realize the technology did that. Right? So you need to work through this up front. So I think in the short run, what you're going to see in banking is a lot of it will go towards, you know, automation, you know, cost reduction, better compliance, better risk management, better risk insights, better portfolio analysis, that sort of stuff. And I think there will be a cautious move into, well, actually, where can we create value that differentiates? But I think whoever does that is going to be the winner.
Thank you for that. So we kind of talked about predictive AI. That's been around for a while, and that's been used by the banks quite comfortably and for a while. Generative AI, you mentioned, been around for a year. So it's always hard to say how well that is going in the financial sector. So am I being unfair if I were to ask you, with the introduction of artificial general intelligence, how would that impact the financial institutions? Or is that something for a conversation we need to have maybe 2 or 3 years from now?
No, well, I think all these things are evolving. I think, you know, if we were to come back in 2 or 3 years' time, I would suspect that a couple of things will have happened. One is the regulation around artificial intelligence will have become, you know, let's say, a lot clearer. Mm-hmm. The banking regulation regarding the use of artificial intelligence, generative AI included, will become a lot clearer. Mm-hmm. The understanding of board directors and executives in terms of, you know, what outcomes this drives into business or could drive into business will have become a lot clearer. And the opportunities and how to manage those opportunities while managing the risks and putting the appropriate rail guards in place, that will be a lot clearer too. So I would say, look, we're on a bit of a learning journey here. And there's no bank, I don't believe there's any bank that's going to run out and basically just go for it and hope for the best. Because that's not going to work. Now, look, I did see one bank in Latin America where they claimed they were dealing with, you know, millions upon millions of customer inquiries on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. And they had a 90% accuracy rate. Now, mm-hmm. You know, I'm in Ireland. If you told the regulator here that you had a 90% accuracy rate in what you're telling customers, they would probably close you down, right? So I think look, there's no room for error, but there is certainly opportunities there to really change the way we understand, interact, and deliver for our customers.
Okay. Let's change direction and talk about individuals. They could be leaders, past and present. Yeah. But though in the financial services would be great if you could, Tony, name up to 2 individuals who have significantly influenced your views on financial services, fintech and banking, and what aspects of their work resonate with you. This will be interesting to hear.
Well, actually, you know, that's an easy one for me because absolutely. Yeah. So one would be Piyush Gupta at DBS Bank. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable transformation of what was a government-owned bank into what is being the world's best bank consecutively for years upon years, the world's most digital bank, the world's most innovative bank, you name it, they have won mm-hmm. absolutely every single accolade. Yeah. So he would be one. And the other would be David Velez of Nubank, who created a bank that's probably just coming on 10 years old, that now has 89 million customers in Latin America. And that is quite phenomenal when you think about it. To start from zero mm-hmm. to get to 89 million customers in a decade and to have unbelievable growth potential still ahead of you because you're doing it so well. So why do I pick both of those? Well, you know, Piyush Gupta, to my mind, and I know he's been recognized by Harvard and people like that as, you know, one of the top 10 digital transformation leaders in the world. He took a bank that was going nowhere, that was probably on the road to being irrelevant, mm-hmm. and he basically changed the whole organization to make it a digital enterprise. Now, what he did, which most organizations don't do, he did a couple of things. First is he changed the corporate goals from, 50% strategic, 50% operational to 40-40 and 20% on transformation. And their transformation was called Make Banking Joyful, which didn't quite resonate with customers. So they changed it to, to the customer's end, live more, bank less. Mm-hmm. But internally, the message was make banking more joyful. What he also did was he got rid of all the silos. So, we had this, concept of two in a box. So the business and IT were all in this together and they worked hand in hand. And let's say you're responsible for business and I'm responsible for IT. Well, if you're on holidays, I need to answer all the questions on the business and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Right. So he joined it all up. But he also brought in a range of things, including, how to get the bank thinking like a startup. It was a 22,000 person startup. It's now a 30 something thousand startup. So they really focused on what it means to, make this a joyful experience for customers. And in the process of doing that, they went and they looked at the Amazons, the Netflix, the Googles, you name it. They went all around the world and found out what was great about all these companies. Mm-hmm. And then how could they take the best parts and bring them back into their own organization and become successful? And they've done it, and it's been huge success. Nubank, though, as I mentioned, is a digital bank. So if you think of Latin America, they started in Brazil, service wasn't great, fees were high, etc. So I think they started with a credit card, and then it's just gone from strength to strength to strength because they have created a digital, mobile, great customer experience that, customers can relate to. And they have, you don't get 89 million customers from nowhere. You have to take them off the other banks, or you have to broaden inclusion. And I think they have done both. But I think their growth path has been phenomenal. And I don't see anything that's going to stop it because they are truly customer-centric. So when we talk about, banks and customer centricity, these guys are there. Both of these banks are there, actually, in terms of really thinking about the customer and what you're trying to do for them.
They're not just saying it, they're actually living it, which is...
They're living it, yeah.
Showing the results. That's fantastic. Thanks for that, Tony. Okay, let's end this episode of Heads Talk with this question. You've kind of answered a part of it, I would say, early on. So let's sort of pontificate on the future. You talked about regulations and you talked about laws, but let's see if you can sort of talk about other things in that space. So Tony, looking ahead, if we were to reconvene next year to discuss trends in financial services and technology, you and I sit down and have a chat, what topics do you anticipate will be at the forefront of that conversation?
So look, I think a lot of the usual suspects will still be there. So I think generative AI definitely will be there, albeit there might be some conduct cases that are falling out of it. Mm-hmm. I think open banking, embedded finance and banking as a service will all be there because there's still a regulatory push in Europe and other places make open banking work. I think the whole issue of blockchain, digital identity and decentralized finance, that's not going away. I think sustainability and ESG will have come up the radar quite a bit because it's not going to be just what the banks are doing in terms of their own sustainability. Mm-hmm. It's what are they doing to actually enable sustainability in the marketplace that's going to be there. Mm-hmm. And I think cyber and data privacy. But if I was to pick two that we haven't touched on, I would say we're going to hear a lot more about quantum computing in terms of what that might do in terms of its ability to analyze just vast amounts of data at incredible speeds, which... Mm-hmm. will enable all sort of new innovations in financial services, but it will also create a whole lot of new risks, including one that no one's quite answering is, will quantum to be able to decrypt crypto? So I think quantum is going to come up, and we're seeing big announcements coming out on the quantum front in the last couple of weeks. And I think the other one that, as we get closer to it, I think Europe has set a date of 2025 for a central bank digital currency. And I think there's a lot of debate around the globe in terms of the role of central bank digital currencies. Europe has said it's going to do it. The UK has kind of indicated it will do it too. The US oscillates a little bit from time to time. China has been experimenting for about 10 years. Right? So I think we're going to see, it's kind of interesting because when you think of fintech, a lot of fintechs go into payments. Why? Because payments are hard, they're expensive, they're not a great experience. And so fintech and central bank digital currencies, they're all recognizing that, you know, there are challenges around the whole world of payments. So I think we're going to see a lot more debate in terms of, you know, how to make payments more interoperable, cheaper, mm-hmm. you know, how they'll work on digital platforms, all that sort of stuff. So my bet would be, you know, the stuff that's there today will still be on the agenda, but I think quantum and central bank digital currencies will probably have come up a bit more as well.
Tony Moroney, a brilliant conversation today on Headstall. Many thanks for your time and insights.
My pleasure. Thank you, Elaine.
Thanks for joining me today on this episode of Headstalk. Don't forget to subscribe to the show via my website, elainepringle.com/Headstalk, or wherever you get your podcasts. Finally, I'd like to thank our sponsors, guests, and you for helping to make the show possible. Please join me next time where I'll be featuring more executives, C-suite leaders, and heads of multinationals.
Headstalk podcast with your host, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.